The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
154, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you're right. You are very right.
Thank you.
I like how you keep writing it down on your hand. We ask people to send reviews, requests, emails, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out a buddy of mine, Jared, had actually sent a review.
Did he?
He did.
What did he say? I'm kind of scared to ask.
Quarantining is not fun. Holly makes this better. Can I get $5? Thanks for the pod from Jared.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Johnny was misleading in his statement
that I would give money. Yeah.
Because we're not allowed to pay for
kind words. Yeah.
But I do appreciate.
Yeah, do a review. That's if you want the real to rate and review, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to do. Also got an email that says, hey, my name is Mrs. Jones. I'm a widow. I'm contacting you because I'm dying and I want to allocate my funds of $3 million to you.
Wow.
It's the second week in a row that we've gotten that.
Well, I'm so sorry for this, impending, transition in your life.
Yes. But, I mean, $3 million, it's not enough. We need a little more. All right. This week, we have someone who, as we're going to talk about something that you and I need a lot of.
Uh-huh.
And that is rest.
It's true.
And being still.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Jen Donnelly. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
We like to ask this skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Jenny, who are you and where did you come from?
That's a question I'm asking myself every day.
Yeah.
I am a mother of 5 kids, all still at home, and have an amazing husband. We are co-pastors of a church in Portland, Oregon, and I write books and just do things that God asked me to do, and that's pretty much it.
Was pastorizing always been something that you've wanted to do, or is this a calling that kind of came to you?
It just came to us, for sure. I've always loved developing people and sharing the Word of God, and we actually just gathered people in our house, just for worship nights and prayer nights, and that really started cultivating, some random retreats that we did and that kind of thing, and then the church evolved from that. Actually, we had a nonprofit ministry that started even before then. So we had a lot of gatherings through that. And that's what we do as well as we have our nonprofit. So we stay pretty active, which is nice.
So you're living in Portland now. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Idaho.
Okay.
Yeah, a little town in Idaho.
And growing up, was faith a big part of your growing up influences, or was that something that happened later on?
Actually, it was kind of an interesting journey. So my mom and dad, when I was about 3 or 4, they were the firstborn of their family to receive Christ in a non-denominational type of way. There was different religions, Mormonism, that was through my family line up until them. And when they were in high school, they were going to a party, and they thought they were just going to go, get drunk. The mom, the parents of that house started telling them about the gospel, the true gospel, Jesus Christ. And my mom said she sat on the floor and just wept and met Jesus there that night. So she was just a teenager, and then they got married, and then they, I remember very, very clearly when I was about 3 or 4 years old, leaning next to my grandmother's bed, and they were asking me, do you want to ask Jesus in your heart? Mm. And I remember it being a very, very real thing. I remember thinking, well, now there's a little man living in my heart, because when you're 3 or 4, that is something that just makes sense. So anyway, but it was a very, very real decision. It was a very real moment for me. And then what happened from there was a couple years later, my family broke apart, which was, of course, devastating. So I was about 7 years old when my parents got divorced, and they were so young. And, now looking back, they tell us that they really just didn't know how to work through things. But anyway, I did not go to church after that. So I grew up, my formative years, I grew up, a couple different things interesting here is I grew up without any church. I lived in a town that was all my friends, not most of them, but all of them were LDS, Mormon. And I was just somebody who remembered that I tucked Jesus in my heart and really had a very, like an extremely fond heart towards Jesus, even though I really didn't know who he was. And I carried a strong curiosity for a long time. And my mom ended up marrying a man that was an atheist. And when I was in fourth grade, and then they split up when I was in senior in high school. And that was really, really intense years. And then I went to college, hit rock bottom, crash, bang, boom, like big time depression. And that is when I truly had nobody else to turn to. Zero. Like I went to a place of absolute zero. And that's when I just really yelled out for the Lord. And he rescued me. And, you know, that seed of being a 3 or 4 year old, knowing that this person was in my heart, that seed came really full circle when I was in a really, really dark place in college. And it's really never looked back since. That was the beginning of just a huge love affair, if you want to call it that, with God. And so it's a pretty interesting story.
You say that you hit rock bottom. What was the realization that enough was enough, that you couldn't take anymore?
I was the good girl in high school. Somehow I was that girl. I was the one that was very strongly drawn to morals, just strong morals. I didn't want to drink or cuss or anything like that. Then I got to college, and I saw all these girls that looked like they were having a really good time, not following the rules I had for myself. And in fact, they were getting a lot of attention from boys. What I didn't realize is I had a father wound, because I had no idea about these spiritual things. I did not.
Sure.
I didn't know that father wound was driving me to become extremely sad, because the boys in college, you know, at that age, all you can see is boys. You know, you don't see books, you see boys.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they didn't see me, because I wasn't the one drinking. I wasn't the one partying. I was over here playing safe Sally. And so I thought, what am I doing? This is dumb. So I started partying with them. And that is when I hit a major depression. I woke up one morning. It was a very significant day in my life. The worst, best day of my life. I woke up in my apartment, and I lived with a Christian. And when I woke up, I felt, it's very hard to describe, but if anybody's ever felt this, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I had a dark, dark, black, never-ending hole in my soul. And it was as if my body was completely void of light. And it scared me so, so badly that I yelled out for my roommate to come help me, because I couldn't even get out of bed. I'd never experienced anything like this in my life. She came in the room, opened the door, and took one look at me and said, "I don't know what to do." And I'm pretty sure I look like death. I got up out of bed. I don't even know how I found my way, but I found a church, the first one I could walk to. And I'm talking the middle of the week, the middle of the day, wearing whatever I was wearing the night before, being at the bars the night before. I stumbled into a church. I remember the secretary just like, whoa, like she was really caught off guard. And because I probably looked like hell. So anyway, she walked me into a room with a pastor. He ended up putting on a song that's about a 20-minute song and left the room. It was a song about a father and a son, and the son loved the father loved the son, but the son decided to leave the father. And then it's about a rescue mission and coming back for the son, which was me, you know, the story of me and Jesus. When he came back in the room, I said, you know, and this is so many years ago, this was like, what, 25 years ago? But I was just absolutely weeping, and I felt a total reconnection with the father, like I'm finally home. And I said, "What's the name of the song?" And he said, "It's not about a song." He wouldn't give me the title of the song, because he knew that he wanted me to really latch my heart to Jesus, not a song or lyrics. So I left there, and, you know, I didn't get cleaned up right away. But, boy, I never wanted that black hole ever again, because my body filled up back with light again. That was the beginning of the Lord just really nursing me back to health, bringing me back my self-esteem, my identity. You know, that took a lot of years. And so, anyway, about 2 years ago, a woman in my church said, "Jenny, I think I found the song." She did. She found it on YouTube, and it's called Daddy's Song. So it's an oldie but a goodie. So I recommend you can look it up and listen to it. It's pretty special.
It's interesting, though, that you talk about the unknown wounds that we have. And I think a lot of people are walking around with unknown wounds. For you, discovering that wound, how instrumental was that in healing?
That was like paramount. So the wounds that we have, we don't really know we have them because they're like roots to a tree. They lie under the surface, but the wounds are what creates the opportunity for the enemy to lie to us. For instance, my parents got divorced when I was 7, like I mentioned, and then my dad had an opportunity to go work in Texas. So Idaho to Texas is about 2,000 miles. So when you're 7 and your brain isn't developed, because it doesn't fully develop until you're 25, which is kind of interesting, the part of your brain that comes to conclusions and doesn't really seal up until you're 25. So at 7 years old, you can imagine a brain that is so, you know, void of understanding. And so all I know is that my dad left. So therefore, see how the enemy comes in to, he takes a truth, and then he'll build a lie upon a truth so that it feels true to you. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't worth sticking around for. That was the conclusion I came to.
No.
And at 7 years old, you need to think of a 7-year-old, and you just think, how sad is that, right?
Yeah.
Well, that stuck with me all the way through, even until through my marriage. And what happened was I found myself acting and behaving in ways that I knew were not good. Let's put it that way. I would feel like, okay, here's my husband. Like the first week we were married, he went out with some friends to hang out, and I was absolutely 100% livid because apparently I am not worth sticking around for. So you want to leave the house because I'm not fun to you. I'm not enjoyable to you. So it only got worse and worse, especially when I got married.
Yeah.
Because now it was all displaced onto my husband. So that is when I started realizing, I think something's wrong. In a tree, the fruit that comes out of a tree, I call those our behaviors. Okay, I'm being irritable with my husband. I'm being angry with my kids. I'm acting in certain ways. So what I'll do now is I'll guide people to what happened to me, which was, let's, instead of behavior modification, like try not to be angry, try to be nicer. Like that doesn't even work. So we have to go down to the root system, which is where the lie is. And the lie is usually attached to a wound. So what happened there is I had to go through several years. It took way longer than I wanted it to. Of course, it always does.
It always
but
does, yeah.
I had... big time. So I had to forgive my dad. I had to go to a place of not just forgiving him in my head, but releasing him from the bitterness in my heart. And ironically, the man that gave me that song that day when I was in college, he handed me a little pamphlet and it said the root of bitterness on the front. And I thought, you got the wrong girl. I am soft. I am tender. I am not bitter. So many years later, I thought, oh, wow, Lord. Okay. So that root of bitterness had to be, the Lord had to deal with that as long as I was willing to let him. You know, it's not something that we can do for ourselves. We can't clean ourselves up. But if we bring ourselves as we are to the Father and say, I really need you to help me. There's something in my heart that's not right. He will absolutely get to work. And he's so tender and compassionate in doing so.
You come from divorce with your dad, and then your mom gets remarried, and then you get married and you're dealing with all of this stuff. How is that for your guys' marriage? Did you ever just think, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm just going to be like mom and I'm done?
You know, thankfully, my husband and I got involved in a church where one of the things that they taught very heavily, which I'd never even heard about before, was generational curses. They just basically encouraged us, look through your family line and see where the enemy has been repeating a pattern. And I thought, well, there's not a single person in my family that's married. Not a single person in my lineage that's married. Grandmothers, great-grandmothers, and maybe there is. I just couldn't think of one, and I thought, well, it's divorce for sure, because my mom actually went on to get married again. My dad got married 4 times. So divorce is like just, you know, just multiple marriage just spilling out of this conversation about generational curses.
Yeah.
So therefore, I knew that that was going to be the thing that the enemy wanted me to entertain. So because I knew that, that was never an option. However, I remember thinking, I can see why it's easier. I can see why people get divorced.
Sure.
You know, quote unquote easier. I can see why people feel unloved in marriage, because I got married and that very same week I felt unloved. So yes, there were days where I thought this would be easier maybe if I was just by myself again. But then again, I knew. I was pretty determined. I'm not going to be the one to repeat the pattern.
you're an author, you're a speaker, you're a pastor, you're a wife, you're a mom. You go to college to get a degree, I'm guessing, of some kind. What did you want to be, or where was your path before, I mean, all of these other things started in your life?
I actually got my degree in nutrition and dietetics. So I became a registered dietitian just because I love health, nutrition. I found myself working in a hospital, which I found out was wonderful for people that are called to that. But I just found myself in a hospital going, I don't think I'm meant to be here, because it was more of a clinical type of thing. I wanted to work with people who maybe were not as far as needing help in a hospital nutritionally. I wanted to maybe catch them more in a preventative, everyday, you know, needing help. So I ended up forming my own business, and then we went into a nutrition business and then did that for 20 years. That's what we did. My husband was a wood engineer. Really, in the last 3 years of our life, the nonprofit that we started, which is not totally about your question here, but we've really made it almost a hard shift. And I don't know, it's probably happened to a lot of people listening, but we were on a path. And then about 3 years ago, the Lord was like, here's this nonprofit. And we already had it, but it was like he was putting it right in front of us, which was a little confusing, because here we are working this business, and now suddenly this nonprofit is taking off. We become pastors of a church. Our life was like turning a pretty sharp direction. And then last year, our business restructured and we lost our business. Never, ever, ever would we have ever decided ourselves to abandon our business. But what God was doing was he was setting us up on a different path 3 years ago, knowing that there was a strong shift coming. So I feel like I've lived, you know, these very different types of scenarios. So I know that sometimes people feel like, well, I couldn't make a shift now. I've been doing this forever and ever. And I would just encourage you, you know, if the Holy Spirit is really drawing you to something that your heart is really beating for, just follow that, obey that, and see what God will do, because he has lots of adventure for us.
When your business kind of fell away from what you had thought it was going to be, did you find it really difficult to make that hard shift? Or did you just really feel convinced that this is a sign from God and we're just going to go, you know, 100% straight now in this other direction?
Well, the first thing that happened was my husband and I both heard Be Still, which is ironic because I wrote a book about this.
Sure.
And it was really and it was really aggravating. Because when you know you're going to lose all your income and you have five kids and you need to put your house on the market and you need to start selling your car or get a different car, like our lifestyle had to go from a 10 to a 3 in a minute. So the Lord says, be still. And you're just going, excuse me? Excuse me? Be still? That's what we're supposed to do right now? Okay. So what happened was we had some really awesome people in our life come along and offer us a whole bunch of, you know, like, you could do this with us, but why don't you do this with us? And because we had so many people in our life that lost the same business, and so they were getting geared up and they were going for different things that were great for them, the Lord said, nope, 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 nope. And these were great things, you know, great opportunities. And he just said, I want you to be still. And so all we did was just get our house ready to put on the market and just sat and waited. It was maybe a month after that the Lord spoke to us and said, the nonprofit I've given you and the church I've given you, this is what you're going to be doing. And so I think he just had to wait until we were a little less inflamed, traumatized, you know, because when a rug gets pulled out of underneath you, as we all know, we've all been here to some degree. Sometimes we can make decisions out of fear rather than out of faith. And that is what we had to wait. We had to wait until we were in a place of faith, because what we did didn't make sense. We actually bought a $3 million retreat center, and we didn't have $3 million. So how do you do that, right?
Yeah.
So we had to get in a place of really hearing the voice of the Holy Spirit, really leaning in. And through some miracles, he made it happen. He made the purchase happen through some miraculous events. So, you know, these things happen to people, and I would just say that if you hang on to a good God, God is the author of my life, and he writes good stories. He writes intense stories. He writes stories that you go, oh, no, is the main character going to make it through? You know? But the main character is Jesus, and Jesus is the one that defeated hell for us. So, you know, and the Bible talks a lot about losing our life to gain it. So there's all of that conversation, too. But yeah, it was pretty intense. And at the same time, it was a really, really, really beautiful experience of trust that just, you know, strengthened us in a lot of ways.
You've used a lot of words like still and calm and rest, and I want to get to that, but you keep mentioning the not-for-profit. What is the not-for-profit? What is it about, and, you know, how can people get involved, or can they?
So our nonprofit is basically we find people who are wanting more. They really want more spiritually, and so we have conferences and courses that give them that. So we have four different pillars. We have health and wellness. We have, for people that want to go into music and worship, we have different online courses for that. We also have online courses for just sheer personal growth, and we also have it for leadership. These courses, we have over 20 courses right now, and they just vary, you know, according to a person's interest. So people can get involved just by grabbing a course here and there. We have ones for marriage and parenting, that kind of thing. Our big thing is our courses that have to do with really finding a place of trust and rest and coming out of a place of anxiety. That's really what our, you know, the tip of the spear, so to speak, of what we do. So we have quite a bit on that. And to get involved, you can just go and you can just purchase, you know, one course. They're very affordable. Or we have an even more affordable way for people to become involved, and they can become a monthly member for $29 and then get access to everything that we have. And there's some other things too, but that's mainly what we do. We love to give people what the Lord gave us so that they can go out and make a difference in the world, whether it's in their family, their career, their, you know, their community, their church. We really like to see people in their personal mission field doing what God has called them to do and really helping equip them to do that.
And the ministry is called what?
It's called Tetelestai. Funny story about that. We were sitting on my couch way before the Lord said, this will be what you're going to be doing. We had no idea. We had just done some retreats and, you know, some really cool stuff, and people were really getting their life changed. And they started handing us money. Like, here, we want to give you an offering for this. We really want to sow into this ministry. And I'm like, I feel really uncomfortable holding people's money in my hands. What do we do with this? So we developed a nonprofit, and we thought, I really liked the word Tetelestai. I had just heard it. A friend just gave me a wooden sign that said Tetelestai, and those are the last words that Jesus spoke on the cross, and it means it is finished.
Yeah.
And so I really liked it. So I was like, well, what about Tetelestai? You know, so I don't know if I would recommend naming your nonprofit something that people cannot spell.
Sure.
Let alone you have to learn how to spell it, and it takes a couple of years to do that.
Yeah.
But it's called Tetelestai, and it means it is finished. It's the work of what Jesus did on the cross and his resurrection is finished for us. Let me tell you the website. We have a shortcut because the name is complex. The shortcut is john1930.com. So john1930.com.
A lot easier than all the vowels and everything else that we got to throw in there.
Yes.
You talk about, though, calm and being still and rest. How can we experience that when we're in the midst of all of this chaos?
Yeah, that is the question of the century, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're going to sit down with me for any length of time, I'm probably going to start talking about this subject. Out of everything that we teach in our ministry, this is where you're going to find me, because this was where I got my breakthrough. You know, we talked about father wounds earlier. Well, this has very much to do with anxiety. So the unresolved wounds, the places in us that are still very fragile, and we are believing lies about ourselves, our life, other people, maybe even believing lies about who God is, that causes a disconnect between us and the Father. I speak of rest as not something that we do, although that is something nice. You know, I like to actually relax, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about finding the place of rest and living there. Just like you can walk in someone's home and it's a place of chaos. You know, it's a place of, feels like you're in Times Square. Rest, according to Hebrews 4, is also a place that God promised and prepared for us. And he says that the Israelites lingered at the edge of rest and did not enter it. And this is what the word says, it says that we should fear that we don't enter rest. So I believe that this is a place, just according to what the Bible says, it's somewhere that we actually can live from. And I would even go as far as to say it's another dimension, as weird as that sounds. It is a place you can live. It is where Jesus is, because where Jesus is, you know, notice that he slept in a boat when it was about to sink and the disciples are freaking out, but he was sleeping. because he wasn't worried. So if we can find that place where instead of saying, Jesus, don't you even care? That's what the disciple said to Jesus. Don't you even care that we're about to die? And he said back to them, haven't you learned to trust yet? I had to make the journey from being the disciple that said, Jesus, don't you even care that my husband is out? Don't you even care that we're in a quarantine, you know, to sitting down next to him on the cushion and saying, Jesus, if you're not worried, then neither am I. So, you know, that's why I have over 200 pages on this, because it's not a, it's a little, you have to unwind some things.
Yeah.
That's what happens. We have to unwind some things. So, you know, we walk people through, you know, the fears that we believe are true. We walk them through just the really simple techniques that we can do every single day to disconnect us from fear and connect us to the Father. So it's not super complex, but it takes some intentionality for sure.
And sometimes it's the easiest things to do that are the most difficult. So for you, what do you feel is the most difficult part about learning how to rest?
Changing the way we react to everything. I call it false fuel. The thing that we pick up to fuel us, to get us down the road a little bit when we hit a stress pocket. So when stress comes and slaps you across the face, because it never really tells you it's coming, it just does. You're suddenly stressed out, triggered, whatever. And then what'll happen is most of us reach for something that has got us a little bit through the last time this happened. So for me, it was sadness and irritability. And irritability was really powerful because it would get people out of my way, which sounds terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just being honest. It's what it does. It gets people to kind of move out of the way so that they can't hurt you and they can't give you more stress. So then you get on the other side of it and then you find yourself apologizing to people. And my question I ask people is, do you find yourself treating the people you love like you don't love them? Because if that's happening, what we need to do is we need to back up and we need to try a different fuel source, which is love. Not love that comes from ourselves, because we don't have enough of that. But if I have sat in the Father's love for any length of time, even 1 minute, and he fills me up with, Jenny, I have you. Jenny, I've got you. Jenny, I'm not leaving you. Jenny, you're not alone. Jenny, if you can't do something today, don't worry, because I know how to do it. You know, trust me, lean on me. Then I can pick up a different fuel source, which is the ability to give that trust and love that I have now absorbed and allow that to fuel me through my day. So it's tricky. It's tricky because we have our habits, mm-hmm. and we're there, we're doing the thing before we realize, wait, here I am angry again, or here I am disconnecting again. You know, so the hardest thing to answer your question is to stop and realize I am grabbing the wrong fuel source to get through this. And I am going to try something new. I'm going to try backing up, letting the Holy Spirit go in front of me, and allow myself to be loved by him rather than being in control. That control piece, that's the only reason we pick up that false stuff, is because we want to be in control. So I'd say the hardest thing is just putting down the thing, whatever it is that we're using. Food is a big one. You know, using food to fuel us through stressful moments. What if we didn't put a ton of food in our mouth? What if we just said, Father, I'm going to stop right here. I'm not going to react. I'm going to wait until I feel you shift in front of me, and now I'm going to follow you instead of try to control my environment. So that can be pretty hard. But once you do it, it's like, whoa, that's a whole lot better.
Yeah.
You know, there's such a reward that comes from doing it differently that it's pretty motivating at that point to do that more.
We live in an instant society, or at least we used to before this pandemic hit, and we want answers right away. Is this something that people can achieve in a quick and easy way, or is this a lifelong process and commitment?
Well, I would say both. Like, I don't want to wake up any day and say, because I wrote a book on rest, I got this thing down.
Oh,
that's really
laughable. Dang it, that's what I was hoping for.
I know. If there's a way, I'll write a book about it. I promise you, I'll let everybody know.
Perfect.
That would be amazing. It's like, when we get to heaven, I don't think we're going to have to focus on this. Because we're constantly bombarded, you know, Jesus said, you're going to have trouble and sorrow in the world. And he said, but I've given you the word and myself to rest in you, so you can trust in me and take courage. I've overcome the world. That's what he says. So we are guaranteed grief and sorrow and trouble. However, there are some very quick things, and I'm going to share one right now that's a really quick technique that somebody could do. And there's 7 ways that the Lord shared with me to find calm in the chaos, and I'm sure there's a million, but, you know, I define 7 of them. But the first one that I talk about is called lean, and it's just pretty literal. I was in my chair just downstairs before all my kids got up, and I heard one of my babies crying, so I jumped up, you know, to run upstairs and grab her in the crib. And I got up so fast that all the blood rushed down. You know, I didn't get blood to my head fast enough. And so I was like, whoa, I'm going to fall over. So I just reached out and grabbed the cabinet and wait until, you know, all the blood comes back to my head so I don't fall over. In that moment, the Lord impressed upon me, Jenny, life throws everybody dizzy spells. You know, there's moments where it's like, that is that's symbolic of this is what it feels like sometimes. You know, maybe most days, actually, depending on what, you know, what lifestyle you're in right now. But he just said, everyone's going to lean on something during these dizzy spells. You're going to lean on something. Some people lean on food. Some people lean on irritability. Some people lean on performance. That one, by the way, that one is a big anxiety trigger, you know, that I have to make people happy and I have to perform for them.
Hmm.
And I have to be perfect. That one, boy, if you can get rid of that one, that one's like freedom city right there. So what I do now is I literally lean against a wall, and it's just an exercise that I do if I feel like pressure is rising, and I'm really sensitive to it now. And that's what I tell people. If you can pick up on, wait a minute, I'm out of rest right now. I'm not in the pocket of rest because my heart is restless. My mind is restless. Something feels like it's shaky. If you know when you're in unrest, that's half the battle. Because then if you know how to get in rest, which was the 7 ways I wrote about, then you can just get there pretty quickly.
Hmm.
But most people don't know that they're not in rest. They let it go way too far. So I just try to catch myself. Okay, here I am. The pressure's rising. I can feel my heart just kind of, you know, go into this spot that I don't want it to go to. So I'll just lean against a wall. You can stretch your arms out, lean against the wall. You can put your back up against the wall. And a really good family member, really, really close to us, she passed away in her sleep suddenly a couple months ago. So my husband and I were asked to officiate the funeral, which we were so honored to. But the day before the ceremony, I was like in my bathroom and I was like, Lord, is there any other way? I do not want to do this. I don't have anything to say to make people feel better. I am grieving. I am devastated. I don't have neat words to tell people. This isn't time for my public speaking. I want to crawl into a cave and cry. I don't want to do this. Thank you for the opportunity, but I don't want to do this. I don't want to see a single person. I don't want to hug anybody. I want to crawl up in a ball and just cry my eyes out for weeks. So now what? Mm-hmm. You know, I was asking the Lord, what do I do now? Because I have to do this. And I didn't want to do it, you know? And so he said, let's lean. You know, here I am. This is 2 years after writing the book. I'm just telling you, I use these techniques all the time. So I leaned up against the cabinet in the bathroom, and he just said, Jenny, you don't have to hold yourself up. You don't have to perform for anybody. There's nothing you can say to make this better. Just lean against me. And I just had to memorize that body posture. So I shut my eyes. It takes about 30 seconds until you feel, okay, I'm leaning on an immovable God. He doesn't have wheels. He doesn't just slip out of underneath me. So God, I'm going to lean on you, and I'm not going to perform. Once I felt the shift in my heart, which the more you do this, the faster that happens, then, okay, good. Whew, I'm good. I'm good to go. So then I was able to go in and just lean on God and not on performing for people. So hopefully that helps people, because that's a really, really quick go-to, like grab that out of my pocket real quick and shift really fast. And there's a lot of other techniques in the book that are very similar.
You talk about losing a business and starting a ministry and dealing with parental divorce, and you're given these opportunities as an author and a speaker. But have you ever in these moments in the hills and valleys of life ever stopped and asked God that question? Why me? Why am I going through this?
Yeah, I have. it doesn't seem like I get many answers when I ask that question. And really, it goes back to God is a good God, and he is a good author of our lives. And if I will surrender to his story, his script, so to speak, then I just believe that his life for me is better than the one I think I want. It's funny because, you know, once you get through a lot of healing and you get to the other side, and, you know, I've had a lot of opportunity to travel and speak and write, and it's been wonderful. And then one day I was like, oh, what would it be like just to work at like a coffee shop? Like, just, do I have to have all this, you know? And the Lord was laughing, and he was like, that's where you started, because I did work in a coffee shop, and I was miserable. And then he actually brought me into ministry. So it's funny how you might find yourself wanting something so simple and so easy, and sometimes we find ourselves wanting the easy path, not the right path, because our flesh, you know, really wants to just kind of kick our feet up. It's like, I don't know if I want to do hard things anymore, you know. But I would just say the most fulfilling life, for sure, is the one that God has for us, not the one that we think we want. And that, I had to grapple with that. You know, when I say, why me, it's kind of like, well, why not you? And so when I finally realized that my life purpose is to advance the kingdom, that's it. Whether it's my child in front of me, whether it's my church, whether it's nonprofit, you know, it's to advance the kingdom through loving people like Jesus did. Once I narrowed my life purpose to that, it got a lot easier, and I stopped asking a lot of why questions. So hopefully that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
The book is still 7 Ways to Find Calm in the Chaos, which is available now at Jenny L. Donnelly on Insta as well. John1930.com. Jenny, thank you very much for sharing your heart today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for having me, you guys. It's been a lot of fun.
I think it's good to know the importance of rest and to be still, and really appreciate the insight from Jenny.
Yeah, and what I love about this is that word it was for the beginning of the year was being intentional. And then I had a season where I was forced to be still, thanks to quarantine. And my aunt kept saying, be still, draw near to God. And now we get a chance to talk with Jenny, and she's talking about being still. So, God, I think I get it. I get it.
It's good to know that sometimes it's the aha moments, and sometimes you just need to be hit.
Yeah.
Hey, Holly.
Be still.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody who listens, continues to listen, who shares, who tells friends, family, complete strangers.
Mm-hmm.
You could download on places like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud. You can look. We have social media.
We do. We have Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
But if there's one place that you're going to find out all this information, it is a special place near and dear to our hearts. And it is called FaithStrongToday.com.